Economic Development, Trade and Tourism Committee is in session. Here joining us are Speaker Chenault, Majority Leader Johansson, Representative Ramris. We have before us esteemed Dan Fauske and many of his key colleagues from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We are looking forward to an overview of the housing market in various regions across the state, some of the upcoming challenges for Alaska housing. We're joined by Gavel to Gavel, which we appreciate. So, Mr. Fauske, if you will keep that in mind and use this as a forum to kind of give a story which is more difficult for Alaska housing to tell, because so often you're down here speaking about a specific cross-section of what Alaska housing do, or talking about the financing and some of the needs of Alaska housing in particular. And so we're delighted to have you today in the context of talking about the housing market across Alaska and the reconstituted entities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the impact that they've had in the unique credit circumstances that surround the United States, and although Alaska's healthy, the ramifications on the Alaska construction and residential market. So with that, the floor is yours. We're happy to have you and the folks that you've brought with you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, Representative Johansson. I have with me Joe Dubler, the Chief Financial Officer of the Corporation, Paul Kapansky, Director of Mortgage Ops, and Brian Butcher, Director of Government Affairs and Public Relations and Communications for the Corporation. What we're going to do is we've got a slideshow, and we're going to go through some issues that are going to show you about the housing market in the state, and then we're going to branch out a little bit and talk about national implications and what we see happening, some of those things that are affecting us, and some of the things that we did up here that allowed the state to kind of skirt by some of the tragic issues as you watch the news on every day, what's been going on. So when we look at our market, currently we have interest rates are at historic lows, prices are stable, new construction is extremely low, and contractors are busy with remodeling. We'll talk later. One of the things when we got into the weatherization was to encourage contractors to reach out, and the contractors that we do business with to reach out to the home builders. With a slowdown in the home building industry, that many of these same individuals could generate and take their crews and switch them over to doing a lot of this work. And we're seeing more and more of that going on, so I'm pleased with that. What happened on the outside is you had an absolute collapse of the housing market. You had an economy with loss of jobs, excessive speculation. You had properties, you've seen stories in Florida, 5 and 6 times they turned over before anyone had ever moved into them. Las Vegas, Stockton, California, and other areas. East LA area going way out outside the city. It's all part of the city now, but 60, 70 miles out in an area, Rancho Cucamonga and some other areas that have been devastated by foreclosures. I know in Stockton, California, you might have seen the news one night where they did a story where they actually have foreclosure tours. Get on a bus and go look at all the foreclosed homes. We have luckily avoided that. You had, like I said, excessive speculation, buying and construction, subprime mortgages, defaulting, and depreciating home values. Now, there's more to this. You also had an incredible lack of oversight.
May I interrupt you for a moment?
Certainly.
Mr. Fauske, we have been joined accidentally, which is our good fortune, by Senator Hollis French. Senator French, we would be so delighted if you wanted to join us. It's a very compelling subject matter, but it's not compulsory. It's an elective opportunity for you.
It's a surprise on my face, Mr. Chairman. That's why I don't play poker. But I'll take a seat here and watch. I've got some free time, and that's why I was down here, Mr. Fauske. So thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you, Senator, and it's nice to have you. The good news, just to touch a bit on oversight, if you go back, it's kind of a sad tale, but looking at the early 90s, 92, 93, you had from that period going on out to today, I think 5, if not 6 different pieces of legislation introduced in the U.S. Congress, both from the Dems and from the R's, to try and limit Fannie and Freddie, and there was serious concerns raised. Unfortunately, we know what happened. They were either ignored or no one gave it serious thought. And you had a market that was running amok with creation of speculative mortgage-backed securities that had no basis or backing to them. And we all know the history. It just took off, and it was an incredible thing to witness. I always, when people have asked me about it, when we were under a great deal of pressure at Alaska Housing to get involved in this stuff. Many, many people wanted us to start, and we resisted that. And there were people that were angry, and now they look at us like, well, maybe those guys knew something or they're just lucky. I go back to what my parents taught me, my grandparents and others. If it looks too good to be true, it probably is. And I think that simple analysis could have served well for a lot of people. The problem is when greed enters in an uncontrolled or unsustained or unregulated fashion, we've paid a heavy price in this country. In the lower 48, where we're different, is adjustable rate mortgages, or ARMs as they're called, were a very small proportion of our total market. We had a small lending community that didn't participate in riskier loans. AHFC, as I stated, did not participate in them. We had minimal speculative development or buying, and we had continued moderate growth in our economy as expected. So we had a good basis to operate, and we did not get out into the outer limits, if you will. Delinquencies, are we in trouble? Third quarter 2008 Mortgage Bankers Association survey, 6.99% nationally. In Alaska, our rate was 2.66%, the lowest in the country. AHFC's delinquencies at 2.29%, which follow historical norms. Our Alaska delinquency rate reached 5.9% in 2000 and 2001. So I wanted to give that perspective of historically where we are, and we're very comfortable with those numbers. They're historically consistent, and there aren't indicators that lead us to worry to any excess as to why their numbers are where they're at. Foreclosures in the third quarter of 08, Alaska ranks 47th in foreclosures at 1.64%, nearly one-third the national average of 5.17%. So those statistics there are comforting, and it's something we keep a close track on. Our market is cooling. On the 2008 end of the year numbers of home sales in Anchorage, and I'm going to show you charts later dealing with the rest of the state, but in Anchorage it was much lower than in the 90s, and from 99 to 2005 the market was hot for sellers, and now we're at a moderate pace. A lot of people said, well, we've had a complete meltdown or slowdown. I said, no, we've slowed, but we're back to really a normal, if maybe a little bit below a normal pace. If you recall 03, 04, you could literally sell your house walking out to get your mail. It was just nuts. And that's not a realistic, sustainable market. It's good while it lasts. And we didn't pay a heavy price for it, but to sustain that is next to impossible, nor would it be good. Average sales price as of December of 08 in Anchorage, $326,000, remaining stable. Matsuburo, $221,000, stable. Fairbanks, $213,000, up 1%. Kenai, $197,000, up 2%, and Kodiak, and we're trying to figure out exactly what's going on in Kodiak, $260,000, up 10%. There's another chart that shows Kodiak as well is above norms. Average sales price, as reported by lenders, the solid gray line is Anchorage. The line with a block on is Fairbanks, Juneau, and Matsu. So you can see that the sales price going out from the year 2000 on to 08, we've had a steady and predictable increase in sales price, which is good.
Mr. Fauske, could I take you back one slide, please?
Absolutely.
Mr. Fauske, on this slide, I was talking to an appraiser in Fairbanks when the price of home heating oil was topping out at $5 a gallon in the interior. And I was explaining to him how much more expensive it was to live in Fairbanks, you know, than in the South Central area. And he compared our market to the Anchorage market, not to the Matsu market, but to the Anchorage market. He suggested that the median price of a home in Anchorage was $100,000 more than it was in Fairbanks, which is what your slide here suggests. And he said that if you averaged in the increased mortgage cost in Anchorage versus the higher energy cost in Fairbanks, that the cost of living was closer than Fairbanksans would want to acknowledge. That extra $100,000 in mortgage value for somebody who just enters the mortgage market, what does that extra $100,000 represent? $600 a month if you principal and plus insurance. I'm not sure how property taxes work in Anchorage. If you have a median home in Anchorage, does it cost you $600 more a month to live in Anchorage, $800 more a month?
If I may, with Paul Kapansky joining us.
Principal and interest on a incremental $100,000 home at roughly 5% would probably approximate $600 a month.
It's interesting if you consider that as a variable for cost of occupancy in a particular housing market, that it costs homeowners in Anchorage $600 more a month to live in South Central. The best deals appears to be on natural gas in Mat-Su, and you get the best of all worlds. And I'm sure Representative Stoltz would talk to you about the excellent fire coverage that you also would enjoy were you in the Chugiak area. Thank you.
These numbers are also September of 08, and we want to look at for current data, and we're monitoring this constantly, and to see what's changed as we've gotten further into the year, and you see more of the effect of some of the energy costs. You know, around this time, and I forget exactly, but when NSTAR announced 22% rate increase for the Anchorage Bowl, for the Anchorage, I don't think that's reflected here. That didn't take effect until what, Paul? It was January, wasn't it?
January
when it came in. And some of the slides going forward, we do have some more current slides on time and market and homes and distance for delivery or time and sale. But your analysis is correct. I mean, it is interesting. We've been a little bit alarmed when we get over to the weatherization side. We had an immediate upsurge in the Fairbanks area, and now we've seen kind of a slowing, and we're really looking into that in terms of, I think maybe people get comfortable with the fact, okay, oil hit 147, now it's down, but we're trying to encourage people, hey, it's odds are that's going to go back up, and we've seen just a slowing. Now it's winter, I know that, and we haven't, you know, Fairbanks has been quite active on the weatherization side, but we want to make sure we're tracking numbers accurately. A statewide housing market sales activity, and this is what I was referring to. You got Anchorage is down 10%, Mat-Su down 20%, Fairbanks as of September 08 down 13%, Kenai down 17%, and again Kodiak up 0.05. We don't know if there's more activity out there, if somebody sold one really expensive house. I mean.
And again, Mr. Fesky, on the previous slide, can you go back to Juneau and give us, because Juneau isn't one of the regions you selected, and tell us a little bit about the I think it's the next slide, tell us about the Juneau market and the stability of prices here. Representative Samuels used to talk about how the value of homes were declining here in Juneau. Is that the Juneau line is the
solid gray kind of up top under the right there. Well, Juneau, and Paul jump in or anybody, but Juneau's always been, I've had many meetings with Juneau officials over affordability issues, and one of the interesting things I always note about Juneau is the largest property owner, and this isn't unique to just Juneau, but the largest property owner is the Juneau borough, the city borough. And I've cautioned them or reminded them many times that until they do something with that, there's not a whole lot that affordable providers can do, because land and a lot down here is, correct me wrong, it was 100,000 or what it had peaked out, or maybe a little bit more than that. And it was very, very difficult on the affordability side. And you had very, very small vacancy numbers. You had 0 to 1% vacancy in rental units. And we've seen some improvement in regards to that. Paul, anything to add on?
No, overall, but when you look at just Juneau and the rest of the areas in the state, you may have gradual ups and downs, but the overall trend has been appreciation in properties.
Thank you. We've been joined by Representative Tuck, and even though it's not on your slide, can you give us a sense of the Ketchikan market, which is also, I think, the fourth largest city in the state, roughly speaking, or the fourth largest area?
I talked with a realtor just before we came down here last week. He didn't give me a lot of specifics because he didn't have details on it, but essentially what he indicated that from 07 to 08, there was a slight depreciation in the market. It's a stable market, but there are some good buys to be had. And that's kind of a summation of what he was a realtor of what he gave me.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, Ketchikan, if you, and of course, you know Representative Hansen, but when we go back a number of years, they've survived some absolute tough economic times. And HFC's been involved in Ketchikan in a variety of ways through the years, whether it be multifamily affordable housing or single-family units. And it's good to see that their market has remained somewhat stable in the recent past. I think with the shipyard and some other stuff that's going on there, that they've seen some stability. I would imagine the residents there would like to see it better than maybe it is, but it's not as bad as it was going back, what, 8-9 years when it was pretty grim. Some of the stuff that we did.
Representative Johansson.
As long as HFC keeps the electric scooters out of the hallways, I'll be happy.
that was an issue, I recall. We will do that. Okay, I think we did this, didn't we? Yeah. The next slide would be annual residential sales activity. You can see, I think this represents Anchorage, and I wanted to give the number. When we look out at the 01 residential sales at 3,302 units, stayed fairly constant going out to 04, 05, started to drop off in 06, and as you can see, we're down a little bit, or, you know, somewhat, and at 2,405 units. Still not a crashing market, representative of coming down off a very peak, very aggressive market in those 02 through 06 years, and not something that sends alarm bells off with us or sets bells off with us. We want to caution people that you're going to see these normal trends, but that it should be a wake-up call that we need to keep things going and keep, you know, what is it that's changed other than certain economic conditions that were prevalent in 05, 06? And what indicators are we looking at now in terms of unemployment, new construction? We'll get in here a little bit on construction permits and what's going on with heavy construction, residential construction, and those indicators that we like to see as to what's affecting what people are doing. I am concerned on the stimulus on the national level. I think we're really going to start dealing with an issue of consumer confidence. People need to feel comfortable. If people, and I've read certain articles by Scott Goldsmith and others on national level, that people right now are saving, but are they necessarily saving in banks? Where demand deposits are up, or what are they doing? Because people are very leery. The stock market burning so many people, and a lot of people going to cash. There's just a lot of stuff we like to keep current on and see any real danger signs and then react as best we can. Recently, if you recall, HFC launched quite a statewide campaign. You saw the ads, and that was in direct response to the negative press and some of the stuff. I don't think it was spiteful, but it was, and I met with editorial boards and others going, what are you doing giving us the news from Detroit all the time? People go home and have dinner with their families going, geez, I'm not doing anything. Things are going nuts. And yet, it wasn't indicative of our Alaskan market. So we launched quite a campaign in conjunction with the home builders and commercial banks and mortgage banks and others. And those were those ads that you were seeing. And the result was good. We turned it where people felt comfortable. Our classrooms started filling up with the home choice classes. And people were writing us letters saying, I feel much better now about buying.
And Dan, what you're talking about was the ad campaign that you initiated that said this market is okay, it's healthy, the state is healthy.
Built to Last.
Built to Last was the name of the campaign. And it ran for how long and in which markets across the state?
6 months. Ran in the major markets, Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks. Might have been some in some of the smaller markets.
And so when you say the classrooms began to fill up, and again, this is for the audience that will watch this, you're talking about the first-time home buyer courses that you have that
right.
Can be anywhere from 10 to 50 people who get a $250 credit on their closing if they go through with closing, and this relates to the 3,000 families per year that Alaska Housing puts into the first-time home buyer program.
Correct. The thing to remember there, too, and I try to go to a lot of those classes when I get a chance just to poke my head in the door and say hi to the group and thank them, is not only the money, which, you know, that's nice, But it's the comments and the letters we get from people that learn so much. You know, we assume that people know mortgages and principles, and they don't. I've even advocated and have talked to school districts about we should offer some of this stuff, even at the high school level. We assume people know. Well, then people don't like to admit that they don't understand it. But when they get into a classroom arena, it's fun. It's couples many times, and they go through it and they learn a great deal. From our benefit, from a business plan, makes them better borrowers.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Number again of homes. This is a homes for sale, Anchorage. These are homes that are on the market, and you can see in 95, a little bit below 1,000, peaked up there in 98, then dropped back down 99, stayed fairly stable through 05, jumped up a little bit in 07, and is starting to tail off again a little bit. It's part of that same trend of just a slowing or cooling in the Anchorage market back to more historical norms. Average market days statewide, Anchorage up 13% from, 72 or 64 through 72 days, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, sorry. Matsu, 79 to 92, up 16%. Fairbanks, up 48. Kenai, up 13. Kodiak, up 25. I apologize for not having Ketchikan on, but as Paul said, he had talked to people down there. A little bit longer on the market. Again, not a drastic turnaround. Cause for some concern moving forward, as I stated earlier in the presentation, as to what are we going to do with our state's economy to make sure that we don't allow things that aren't bad yet to get bad. And I think we can talk about that a little bit later on as we go. How long does it take to sell? Active inventory in the dark line, the purple line in sales, 01 through 09. Average time market for sale, as you can see, as the previous slide indicated, we've dropped, slung. Still not at numbers that cause us too much concern. Again, going from a hot market to a slow, it gets exacerbated or maybe exaggerated by people as to what they perceive is going on in the market. Annual residential building permit activity. As you can see, the high years, again, back to that 01 through 05, 04 era, and down significantly this year. This, I think, or in 08, I've been meeting with local banks. I've been meeting with the home builders. One of the concerns that's going on is the tightening of credit to substantial developers in the state. And the banks' comments have been, and Paul's going to add some to this, we've done some research on this, what is going on? They've strengthened it now or tightened it down to where the builder must own the lot. They've limited spec building by considerable margin. They've taken some of the biggest builders and ratcheted them way back as far as spec construction. So it gets to be, a one-to-one ratio, isn't it, Paul, for amount of money they can borrow versus what the development costs are. And it reaches a point where the developers are going, well, hell, if I got to spend all my own money, what do I need a bank for? That's kind of an anger statement, but they do need the banks. But there has been a real tightening of the credit.
And a quick reference point on that. In one of our first slides, you don't need to go back to it, you talked about how our foreclosure rate is so low in comparison to the rest of the state. But for a moment, without going back to the slides, would you tell us what it's like compared to a year ago or 2 years ago? Have we seen a doubling of foreclosures, for instance, in the state of Alaska? Have we seen a sharp increase relative to how robust our market is, or have we seen a steadiness in the foreclosure market? Just say your name again for the record. Just for
My name is Paul Kapanski. I'm Director of Mortgage Operations. For the last year or two, there has been a gradual swing in foreclosures. But I would say nothing to get alarmed about. And we showed a slide earlier that showed back in 2001 or earlier, we had a delinquency rate of 5.19, and I think our foreclosure rate was significantly higher at that point than it is now, although I don't have that off the top of my head. It's the foreclosure rate is gauged on the number of loans that we have outstanding, and that's estimated at roughly 93,000 loans, mortgage loans in the state of Alaska. And the foreclosure rate at the end of the third quarter was 0.88, and I think the prior quarter was 0.72, and perhaps a year ago it might have been somewhere around 0.5 or somewhere in that area. It's increased, but I don't think it's not alarming whatsoever.
Okay, thank you.
Not long ago, and I don't call in very often, if at all, at a radio talk show in Anchorage, and coupled with a headline in the Anchorage paper was that Alaska's fastest growing foreclosure rate in the country, up 25%. And then the talk show got going, and I said, that's it. And I called in, and go, oh, wow, we got Dan. And I said, you know, come on. It went from 0.5 to 0.72. Now, mathematically, or 0.7, yeah, you're up 25%. We're still below 1%. So it showed the stark reality of the power of a bold-faced headline and what it can mean to people if people don't take time to read it. And so it just kind of strengthens what Paul's saying. We are not seeing numbers that are causing us concern. We recently went to LBNA on the Neighborhood Stabilization Act money that came in, the $19.8 million. That's going to be dedicated in large part to any blighted or foreclosed areas, and we're still waiting to hear back now from our counterparties across the state as to where this money can best be utilized. In other states, I think California got $500 million, if not more, in Florida and the big areas to help on the foreclosure side. So we're blessed up here that we're not seeing that. Number of permits.
Dan, on that subject, what's that money going to be used for? You were talking about the $500 million for California, and I think it was $19 million for us. What is that? Is that going to be used to pay down, loans or the foreclosures that they have now, or how is that going to be instituted?
If I could, but we did do the RFQ, the request for qualifications is on the streets, and so
For the record, Brian Butcher, Government Affairs Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Mr. Chairman, Representative Chenault, there are very strict limitations on how this money can be used. It can't be used to pay down anybody's loan. It can't be used to help anybody avoid foreclosure. The focus of it is mostly to deal with distressed and blighted neighborhoods, because what's been happening in the hardest hit states are there have been so many empty homes that it's really been detrimentally affecting the home value of a lot of the other areas. We're fortunate in that we don't have that problem here, and between the tight restrictions on it and the fact that the money has to be obligated within an 18-month period of time, it's so tight that we may have some difficulty actually getting that money obligated. We have an RFQ out, like Dan said, and we are working with nonprofits to come in to us with proposals as to how we can use the money. Another example is if there's a house in foreclosure, it can be used to purchase and turn it around and provide it for a lower income family. However, the restrictions in the legislation says that the average number of homes in total that you buy in the program has to be 20% under assessed value. And no home that you purchase in the program can be higher than 5% under assessed value. Well, in this state, things are healthy enough that if a bank has taken a foreclosure, they're not going to be motivated to sell the house for 20% under the assessed value, because they can get much more than that. So we're looking at some of the nonprofits, some of the Cook Inlet Housings, to work with us on trying to find a good example would be areas that had a burned out home or a home that had been boarded up and nothing had happened with it for years, to work with the bank, whoever owns it, to work to try to get it turned around, put some work into it, and then get a family in there.
Speaker Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Brian, I certainly appreciate it. I just was curious if this is going to go back into a loan program for low income on property, or, as you say, it may go to I guess, get rid of blighted neighborhoods if that happens to be the case. I just didn't know what the restrictions were on that $19 million. So,
yeah, it's frustrating. Like Dan says, the positive with Alaska is we don't have a lot of problems, but that health of our home activity is the same thing that makes it difficult to use. And we're going to have more money coming into the program too, because as you might imagine, many of the states are just, they're going to spend the money as fast as they get it. It's a little bit more challenging for us.
Through the chair, Representative Chenal, we can send you down some of the guidelines, and then I would like to make a suggestion that we can keep the legislature informed either through a presentation or written material as to what it's looking like when we get the proposals back. And we need to alter our plan that was presented in front of LBNA, which was readily accepted by HUD when we submitted it, but yet a little bit out of the norm for what other states are going through. So we were trying to be somewhat inventive, but not too far off track from what the federal government expects with it.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. How does the public access information regarding how to keep from going into foreclosures or safe mortgage lending companies?
Well, Representative Tuck, that's a good question. I there's the classes that appear. They certainly, when they contact a mortgage banker, their realtor, one of the safety nets that's out there is these programs, which used to exist a year, 14, 15 months ago, are dead now. And so the likelihood of someone getting involved in that kind of lending activity is greatly reduced, which is a byproduct of a market gone amok. They can certainly access our websites. They can they should be getting good information. I think that what I'm trying to say is the real checks and balances now is the restrictions that have been placed on loans by the federal government and what takes to qualify and what your FICO score has to be, and so there's just more guidelines that are out there now for people to qualify to get into a mortgage. Any suggestions, Paul, or anyone? Go ahead, Brian.
If I could follow up on that, Mr. Chairman. When we get phone calls about somebody that's in trouble with foreclosure, we emphasize that they talk to their bank, because the banks don't want to own properties, and they're willing to sit down and really help you work through, if you do want to keep your house, work through working out a system that you can try to come up to, where you need to be in terms of getting rid of the delinquency. We also have a situation you might have seen in the last couple of days. J.P. Morgan and Bank of America have both said they're freezing foreclosures. They won't be foreclosing on any homes for at least the next couple of months. So banks are getting more proactive on it too. But we really emphasize that folks work with their banks, because, like I said, they don't want to own the home. They want you to succeed in the home. And if there's a way they can set it up to get you through your difficult period, then that's what's going to happen.
Representative Tuck, we have also in a grant that we do through the what's it called, credit counseling, home counseling services, I can't remember the exact title, that we help, and people can go in and talk to these folks as well. We also at HFC, if we find ourselves in a unique situation where there's a foreclosure potential, we do workouts with people, we meet with people, we try and negate that from happening if at all possible. And sometimes, unfortunately, it isn't, but we do work with people on workout situations on distressed properties. There's so few of them and that's a good thing. I hope I answered your question, and Brian.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I know that times are tough now, but when times were going good and the markets were creeping up, I don't know if it's always an advantage for a bank to hang on to that loan lender when they can just roll that property over. And I didn't know if there was just some access for them so they can get locked into and have help, but basically the advice is just go to your banking lender and work what you can.
Absolutely. And the days of no asset loans are gone, and unfortunately they should have never existed. And so it is tougher, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because as we've learned, there are a whole lot of people buying houses that shouldn't have been. And I ask now, to what benefit did they receive to have a home for 6 months and then lose it? So,
yeah, another perspective is money shouldn't have been lent out that was lent out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate your presentation.
Moving on, number of permits by area. Juneau, we have a slide up here on, I'm trying to remember, these are building permits, correct? Number of residential? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see Fairbanks kind of spiking up there again in the 06, 07, dropping down significantly. Juneau remained fairly stable, 01, through 06, and then started to tail off this last couple years. Apartment vacancies, Anchorage at 5%, Juneau 4.7. Juneau used to be 0 and or 0.1 or 1 and below. So 4.7, you consider 4, kind of a healthy market.
What does that make?
Fairbanks, 21.2. We attribute that to the
deployment
of the troops, the Stryker Brigade. Wasilla Palmer, 2.1. Kenai Wasilla, 8.6%. We have a more detailed chart on the next slide that can break it down by
Size
of apartment and everything. Go ahead, Brian.
The national average is 10, just to give you an idea of how we rank compared to what the national average is.
Thank you.
This is kind of a good sheet. If you hang on to it, it breaks it down by the type of efficiency, one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom total, shows the different areas, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Palmer, Wasilla, Kenai, Soldotna, and we can add to that list on different communities if you'd like, but it's a good indicator what are hot items and what are not. And you can see, if you look up there, Juneau, three-bedroom number of vacancies, 0. Anchorage running at 3. Fairbanks a little bit higher at 8. Palmer Wasilla is 0, both on 2 and 3-bedroom. Efficiency 0. And then Kenai Soldotna is 0 efficiency. 1-bedroom, a few out there, 11. And then 2, 7. 3-bedrooms, 2. So, and anytime we can ever supply any of this information, we'd like, we have ready access to it and stuff. And it's kind of good to have for your areas and answering questions for constituents. Slide here, how about interest rates? Let's look at the average interest rates over time. The following four slides are reprinted with permission, mortgage information service. I don't know why I'm reading that, but I guess I just was reading. Short term is good, still good. As you can see, 30-year fixed mortgage. Going back to February 05, at around 5.5, moved on up through July of 06, and then started its trend down that we've been seeing. The 15-year following the same trend line, usually about 100 basis points or a little less below the 30-year trend. And that trend, we continue to see it inching down. Longer view on rates well below average, 30-year fixed rate mortgages, 1984 through 2008. As you go back to 84, 13.5%, spiked up to almost 15%. And we've been down considerably over that string of 20-some years. Interest rates as low as the 60s. National average mortgage rate, 63 to 2008. Just a little bit different way of looking at what the last slide was showing you, when we peaked up there around 15. And then stabilized on down. There was a great deal of work, as we all know, during those years following, I believe it was the Carter administration and the Iran, that whole era when, good grief, investment earning rates at 20% and greater to get interest rates down. And with this slide, Joe, you want to come up and we're going to, Joe Dubler is going to come up and, I wanted to just preface with Joe and the great work he does for the corporation and the tough time that, is currently occurring with the federal government throwing money at. And the other downside to it is you really have no place to put your invested funds. It's safe, but earning, 15 or 25 basis points in treasuries. So the idea of earning a decent spread is certainly Gonsa. Joe, if you would, please, and we'll talk about these next few slides.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Joe Dubler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Welcome, Joe.
Thank you. You can see from this slide, the red line shows basically, and it's a little lower than what our true cost of funds is because we're housing. That what that represents is the municipal market data, which is an index of very highly rated municipal securities. And you can see that it's gone pretty flat from February 08 to February of 09, while the taxable conventional market and the LIBOR market, you can see 30-year LIBOR is the dark one. LIBOR is the London Interbank Offered Rate. That's the rate, in this case it's a 30-year index, that banks lend to each other. So it's a preferred rate banks get from each other. That's a taxable rate, which you can see where we're at now over here is trading well below our tax-exempt rate, which is an anomaly in the market that we're seeing and is causing us some problems we'll get into a little bit later. The U.S. Treasury, the 30-year Treasury with the flight to quality, is also well below the rate that we're able to borrow at. The interesting thing about this, if you look up at the top, the percentage of time lower than the current interest rate in the past 10 years, 30-year LIBOR only 2% of the last 10 years it's been lower than it is now, and U.S. Treasury only 2% of the time. 30-year MMD is 47% of the time. So we're much higher relative to other indices in the market today.
This is your access to capital. Is that what we're talking about?
That's correct. This is basically our borrowing cost. And like I said, that's even a little bit lower. We're up around 6% right now if we went to the market today. And we'll get to this slide shows. This one's even uglier because what it shows is our tax-exempt rate, which is the blue line now. That's our tax-exempt rate at about 6.25. We're at today 6.125, 6.25. The conventional market, as anybody knows that's been looking around, is dropped below 5% a couple months ago, and it's been hanging right around 5%.
Joe, I'm just going to presume, does this suggest that Alaska Housing in the near term has a structural problem in borrowing money and being able to lend it out and be competitive in the market with other sources of funds for borrowers?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if I call it structural. We're living in a market that, with the federal government pumping Fed rate monies in, 4.125, 4.375, 4.25, whatever, you know, we are so priced out of the market. For all intents and purposes across America, there is no tax-exempt market. It's starting to come back. But as I know the state learned in trying to sell bonds in the prison, rough market going. We were in the market at one point. We wanted to do a bigger deal, but we ended up pulling it back and sold bonds at, about $80 million we did. We got good pricing on it. But that's been a year ago. Since then, we're just priced out. And so we're not shutting programs down, though. Across America, many of the mortgage finance corporations that operate in that tax-exempt market have shut programs down. They don't have the capital that HFC does. And it's been unfortunate. I know student loan corps are having a very difficult time accessing capital, municipal governments. I hope that this is a short-term phenomenon. There's been a great deal of work that I've done, and Joe, and along with many people across the country, advising bank regulators, Federal Housing Finance Authority, with my work on the Federal Housing Finance Board, and Joe has attended some issues of reminding people of what's going on here. So when you say structural, I will make you a solemn promise that if this doesn't improve, we'll be the first ones down here talking to folks going, you know, but you have to have a market that you can access. When people say, well, we should be doing something, well, unless you're going to subsidize, but what would you subsidize? If people can go out through the feds right now and get a loan for 4.5%, why would we subsidize below that with cash and just lose money?
Right.
It makes no economic sense.
Right.
So if I may, for just a moment. Right now in the state, I just talked to someone the other day. There was a period of time several weeks ago where the wait for a mortgage banker or a banker to call you back on a refi was 24 to 48 hours. The list was so long. There's people now that have locked in rates, 4.125, 4.375. 4.375 was the number I heard the other day, and they might close the loan in April or May. And so Alaskans are just going in. I don't blame them. They're taking advantage. They're refining. You're getting people now that had 5.5%, 6% loans, getting it down to 4.375 a month they're saving. Good for them. I can only hope that they reinvest that money, or that, because that's the concept that's in play, is that money, you know, gets deposited or put in a bank and is loaned out or gets invested in something. But that's really where Alaskans are taking advantage of the low rates, where in other states that money is trying to negate absolute disaster that's going on. And that's really the stark difference between our economy and our housing market versus what's going on in other areas. What frustrates me is if you're below water on your house, meaning you're a good, hardworking citizen, you happen to live in Las Vegas or Santa Barbara, not Santa Barbara, but you know, Southern Cal or Florida, Stockton, and you go to work every day and you make your payments and you feed your kids and you take care of your family, but the market dropped out of your house went to value, for, let's say your house was valued at $250,000 when you bought it, it's now worth $200, $250, you can't refi. Because the appraiser goes out and says, well, we can't help you because your value of your home is less than the note that you have outstanding on it. So the very people that you're trying to get back, and I don't mean the frivolous loans, I mean the ones that just the market collapsed around them, are not being affected. It's going to be interesting to see what the president comes out with when he's announced now that the next thing is the housing market. And I hope to be actively employed along with Paul and Mark and a few others of us in discussions with people that we get asked to help on. So anyway.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the structural question, it's more, I mean, the structure we've got today is the same structure we've had for 30 years. It's a market issue right now. And part of the market is the housing market and the federal government trying to fix the housing market by pouring money into it.
Okay.
And what that's done is driven their costs down, or their cost of funds down, by borrowing at a treasury rate while we're still borrowing at a tax-exempt MMD rate. What that's doing to us, like Dan pointed out, we're going to be experiencing a whole bunch of refinancings, I believe, in the next 6, 8 months, 12 months, however long they're still doing this. And their plan, by the way, from what we heard in meetings in D.C., was through December 2010, they're going to be aggressively increasing their mortgage portfolios, at which time they're going to back off and start ratcheting it down.
Okay.
So we're not predicting much activity through the end of this calendar year, at least. And
But one of the issues we've been approached upon is back to the credit of the banks and the liquidity issue, their availability of credit. We've been asked, and we're entertaining discussions. We haven't made any commitments yet. Let's say HFC gets a bunch of prepays, which means cash is coming in, the notes have been taken out. Where do you invest the money? 25%, you know, 0.25%. I mean, that's maybe the best you could do. There's also the issue if we want to get involved in a participation loan program with local banks, if the banks are hesitant to loan back to the home building side of things. And again, it's in its infancy, but I wanted you to hear that from me, that discussion is going on, if credit needs to be made more available to sustain or keep our market going.
Okay.
If that were to take place, there's a great deal of work to be done on it, but it certainly would be working in conjunction with the bank, who are our friends and partners.
Okay.
Use bank underwriting, but maybe what's difficult, if you take a Wells, for instance, and it's the same people we've all known for many years, but they're now, that's a national firm. The decisions that they make are coming out of Minneapolis or San Francisco versus local banks, but yet the local banks are strongly influenced by decisions big banks make. And so it's an issue I'll keep you posted on, that we're working closely with our lending community and with the business community.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Oh, this is Joe. I wanted you to take advantage of Joe. I don't know if you guys are trying to go here, but
We're in no hurry. This is important material. So,
Joe, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just this market. I mean, it's an anomaly. It's a strange market we're in right now. And like all anomalies in markets, it'll come back. And it's just a matter of time. You know, what we are doing at the corporation is not a knee-jerk reaction to a short-term problem. We're going to ride it out, and eventually the market will come back, and we'll be back in business as usual.
Yes, sir.
I thought you'd enjoy this slide. This is predictions as of 2-9-9, over the next 30 days, over the next 90 days, what's going to happen. As you can see, they're all over the boards. No one really knows. I think people take comfort in the fact that it's being worked on, but it remains to see what the final outcome is going to be.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you. Those are predictions in your office, your staff? These predictions nationwide? Or what's the source of the predictions?
The triangle. We had talked about
250 mortgage experts
across the country. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I just need to do that.
Mr. Speaker, Speaker Chenault.
Glad to see, Mr. Chairman, glad to see it wasn't the oil revenue forecast.
All right.
Okay. Low interest rates, what has changed? Elibor borrowers, and Mr. Representative Tuck, this might be back to a little bit about what you and I were talking earlier. Eligible borrowers have diminished by 30 to 40%. Loan investors and mortgage insurance companies tighten credit standards. Mortgage insurance, That business, especially the bond insurance side of it, is in absolute disarray. You have a higher down payment now required, higher FICO scores required, jumbo loan financing limited, no more exotic loans, the old ninja, no income, no job, no assets, interest rate teasers, payment options, interest only, half interest, et cetera, payments. Those things are all a thing of the past. FHA's increased its fees. There's no seller finance down payment assistance. People don't qualify to refi, so you have a decrease in property values and shouldn't have gotten the loan in the first place and don't qualify. So that's what's changed
out there. Mr. Speaker?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And Dan, maybe you can enlighten me. What is the federal, or do we know yet what the federal government plan is going to be on all of these refinances? I'm going to call them refinances. I mean, certainly, you know, we all know why we're in the position that we're in and the market that we're in and why people are losing their homes. But, you know, is there going to come a point where the federal government says, okay, we're gonna drop your loan and we're going to allow you to pay either a longer-term loan or a lower interest loan than unfortunately, apparently, like myself, a guy that's paid, the house I'm living in now for close to 17 years, payment every month, and I'm going to end up being the taxpayer that foots the bill to allow people who couldn't afford a home, or couldn't afford the home that they're living in, I shouldn't say couldn't afford a home, but certainly couldn't afford the homes that they're living in. But yet, because we're in the situation that we're in, the federal government's going to allow these people to continue to live in those homes, and it's going to cost me, the taxpayer, the money to front the bill. And I certainly haven't paid enough attention to the real issue to determine how they're going to get out of this thing. But I certainly see a number of these people having to are still being in these homes in 5 years or 10 years.
Well, through the chair, Representative Chenault, and I know Brian wants to comment, and I think maybe we all do. I keep it down to the problem in the American economy and the market. It started in the it's in the housing industry. The rest of everything else is an offshoot of that. The Wall Street collapse was based on mortgage-backed securities and other non-collateralized investments in the trillions of dollars. I'm a believer that you either fix the housing market, you must go back and get to the basis of the problem before you can go forward. Now, the stimulus, again, no one's read it, but there appears to be stuff in there to get certain things generated, but I'm a believer you have to go back to the market. Now, in response to your question, which I share the same concern, if in fact you've been a good citizen and made your payments, why am I being chosen to subsidize someone that wasn't as good? The only thing I can say to that is if you happen to be in a neighborhood because of the activities of others, maybe some good, some bad, and your value of your home starts diminishing, then it might be the best money you've ever seen spent, because most Americans, the most substantial thing they own is their home. And most Americans, when they get into retirement years, are looking at retirement. That home is a significant piece of their retirement. So the last thing you want to see is a diminishment in the value of that home with 40-50%. Now, I'm going on here, but they need to figure out a way to keep people in their homes, in my estimation, and maintain home values. The only way I can see, you're going to have to subsidize. I do not think that they should be rewarding bad behavior. And now, who gets to determine good versus bad behavior? That is a tough question. Brian, you want to get to
something? Well, in this building, the speaker does. And he has a question.
Unfortunately, and while I agree with you, Dan, I also agree that if we didn't have the speculation out there, if we didn't have the homes being built for people who couldn't afford to buy those particular homes, myself as a homeowner, while my home may be valued at less money, it certainly wouldn't have appreciated if I'd bought it 5 years ago. I probably could have bought the same house for considerably less because of the speculative market. So,
just one thing,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On a national scale, that's one argument. From an Alaskan scale, I think we're blessed that we're not going to maybe experience. If we experience it, it's because of our own fault. We need to be diligent here. But so far, we're not seeing much of that here.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one final statement. Dan and I commend you and your group for not falling into some of the traps that unfortunately lenders and others across the U.S. Fell into.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
If I could just add something, Mr. Chairman, this is Brian Butcher. When we have been talking to our congressional delegation, we have really emphasized, because so many kind of out there ideas are being kicked around Congress, allowing bankruptcy judges to reduce mortgage rates on troubled homes, which would just wreak havoc with banks that are already in disarray, and other things. We've emphasized to them that in trying to fix some of the problems in some of these bad areas, we need to be very careful that we don't throw everything off to the side. And in talking with other states, a good portion of this country's doing fine. The Midwest, the South, there's a large number of states that are in the same position we are that are frustrated when we're constantly trying to figure out what fixing California and fixing Florida and Nevada is going to potentially do to our state. And we don't want to be thrown into it while they're trying to fix other states. So that is something we're working with the delegation on to make sure that the big picture is being looked at, not just the people screaming the loudest.
Well said.
Okay. We'll move a few more slides in. Interest rates equate to buying power. 1% decrease in interest rates roughly translates into a 10% increase in home buyer purchasing power. And that's just kind of a good rule of thumb. Most things staying relevant are the same. That's how that works. Demand for housing is likely to supply subside. State demographers forecast population growth in Alaska equal to an increased likelihood of demand for housing. We've seen the Alaska population of 1945 to 2030, they're projecting the same trend. As I've stated to you in other committees and in discussions, fastest growing segment of our population is seniors. Not just that we're senior growing old in place here, we're getting a lot of people that come in. Beautiful place to live, great tax structure, good quality housing at a relatively low price compared to certain areas where people come here coming out of California, Seattle, mm-hmm. Portland. You know, it's a nice house down in the Kenai or up in Fairbanks or wherever, you know, Ketchikan, wherever, Juneau. Pretty enticing to people. And this is a chart I think it's one of the most substantial or best ones I like to look at. It's called the Affordability Index. And what it tells you is how many incomes per household is required to purchase a home, and we're currently at about 1.62. And that, as you can see, has risen through the years. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it has dropped down and has spiked up a little bit here in the third quarter of 08. It's a number we watch kind of closely because it tells you what's going on in terms of jobs and how many people got to be out there working in order to afford a roof over their head. Our loan volume, 2007, 2,800 loans, $565.7 million, 08, 2012, 493, projected through 09, 1,500, $360 million, down 25%. This is just telling you what we know is coming, what's going on. Not a whole lot we can do about it at this point. We're going to ride it out. We have the financial strength to do that, and we're plenty busy doing other things, and we certainly aren't going to get frivolous.
Yes, sir.
And chase a bad idea down.
You won't chase the market. You'll wait till the market comes back and Alaska Housing is a player again in the market.
That's correct. Construction spending, 2009 forecast, total spending $7.1 billion, down 3%. Private sector spending $4.3 billion, down 12%. Public sector spending, that's you folks, $2.7 billion, up 16%. They kind of wash each other out, or we're down in one area, we're up in another, and so spending's pretty vibrant out there. There's a lot going on.
And this is pre-stimulus bill, so that number will get even larger, I would imagine.
How did Alaska compare? Nationwide, median home values fell for the ninth straight quarter, 15.3% for the year. Anchorage, median home value up 3% nationwide. Existing home sales down 3.5%. Western states, existing home sales down 31.6%. Alaska, existing home sales down 9%. So we're down, but we're not. Oops. Now, if I may, I'll quickly I can finish up with these energy programs, Mr. Chairman. Do you want me to continue? Or?
Dan, we're not in a hurry. This is valuable information. We're the restaurants will stay open. We're good.
Well, thank you, sir. As I presented to two of you on the energy subcommittee, this is going to be a quick rerun of some of the information you've already seen. But on the energy programs, $200 million for weatherization, $100 million for rebates, $60 million additional for rebates. A big training component for both programs. I have to apologize. Brian's not feeling real good today. I'm just happy he's here, but I know how he feels. Previous program, we weatherized 600 homes. This year, that number will triple to 1,800. Year two, 4,000. Year three, 7,500. Statewide weatherization providers and housing authorities continue to ramp up. Home energy rebate program ratings processed, estimate more than 8,000 ratings. Performed by raters, 6,202 ratings processed, approximately 58.9 million committed, 150 to 200 applications received per day, more than 200 inquiries per day, 349 post-improvement rebates paid, average $5,941, 162 new five-star plus rebates paid, totaling 1.2 million.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Speaker?
Dan, is that... post-improvement rebates paid, is that about, well, it's a little more than half of what was kind of originally set aside for each of these projects?
We had a range of Representative Chenault between 4,000 and 10,000. The way we established. Brian, anything to add on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Chenault. Just a rough guess was that it would average about $7,000 when all was said and done. It's about $6,000 now. We suspect it may creep up a little bit as we get to some of the folks that have taken longer because potentially they're doing more work to their home. But we expect it to be right there in the $6,000 to $7,000 range.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
On the home energy rebate program, the wait list is of 2509 sample communities, Anchorage 5,935, Kodiak 183, Juneau 122, Fairbanks 16, Bethel 4, Dillingham 5, total dispatched 6,821. So I get hit a lot about Anchorage. The list is bigger. It's a bigger town. It's winter. It's slowed, but it's going to start picking up. We've even seen Fairbanks raters coming down to assist. I think you're going to see a natural pickup just based on the weather, and we're in a good position. The next bottleneck that we anticipate, we're trying to negate that, will be contractors available to do the work. But the work's getting done, and the program is quite popular, as you can see.
And we expect to have the funds to get through FY10, so we're not coming asking for more money. We feel pretty comfortable that we're going to have the funds to get through the year.
Thank you, Brian. Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, Dan, is there any reason why, like, Bethel has four and Dillingham has five? Is that because a lot of these people have already used the program that was available in previous years, or is it just that there's not raters out there to be able to address their needs? Certainly, with the price of fuel, is it... At the cost that it is in some of the communities, I would suspect that there would be a higher number.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chenault, that has a lot to do with it. Raiders has been a problem. When there's raiders in a community, the number tends to go up. The positive of Fairbanks being so low right now is we train so many raiders there, and there aren't that many people on their list, so we're getting more roving raiders out to the rural communities. Also, with the rural communities, a higher percentage tend to be in the weatherization program. Yeah. So there's fewer people wanting to take advantage of this program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
Okay. Finishing slide on what's the big picture. Average home prices are stable. Home sale activity down. Time on the market's up. Delinquency's low. Foreclosure's low. Interest rates low. Overall construction outlook good. New home construction down. Additional $1 billion estimated in stimulus package and a population growth forecast. We've got a lot of good data to deal with. And we think, in our opinion, or mine, and is a good base to work from. The work you folks do here in analyzing programs going out has a key part in what's going on. And I think, as I stated earlier, on consumer confidence and making sure that Alaskans feel that they're not getting sucked into this vortex in the lower 48 and that the economy in our state is remaining stable and strong. And I think with that, and again, the stimulus is something that we're analyzing now. That I know there's energy money in it. It was quite a moving target there for a while. We had, our rough estimate at one point was on the weatherization side, based on current formulas that, you know, the formula-driven programs we assist with, what, about $57 million would be coming in.
It's considerably less than that now.
Yeah, so that's dropped. And we're going to be doing some work on that. We've been requested by OMB and others to make sure we break down areas of our responsibility that the money comes in and how much we anticipate.
Thank you.
What it needs to be spent on.
Can you go to the next slide so that folks that want to go to your website or the phone number, will this presentation be available on the website for anybody who wishes to download it? Because it contains such, you know, an abundance of, it's a treasure trove of material for somebody who's interested.
We will make that available, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And then as we wind things up, I would encourage you to find a forum on the in the other body to present this material. I think much like your interest in having a media program for 6 months to talk about the general health of the Alaska housing market, I think it would be very helpful to spread this material here in the building so that the legislative branch grasps, you know, the general health and well-being of this market. You know, from a statistical point of view, you know better than anybody that statistics seem to run this building. Mm-hmm. And the general health of the market is so important. Gentlemen, any final remarks? And then I have a thought I'd like to leave you with. Representative Tuck?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You know, I appreciate the comments you guys made about keeping people in their homes. And I think that is the foundation. I think that there's a lot we need to do. The stimulus package, I hope it becomes successful. But I'm also concerned that if we don't close that back door, which caused everything to happen in the first place, that the stimulus package may need another stimulus package down the road until we close that door. And it looks like there's activities going on now that's making it tighter, making it more reliable. But I appreciate the comments on that.
Mr. Speaker?
No comments.
So the question that I would have for you is, I'm a shareholder at Northrim Bank and have been for years and years and years. I watched their share price go from $7 to $28, and it's now come back to being less than $10. And the book value of the bank is $16 or $17. And Denali State Bank is publicly traded in Fairbanks, a small group. Mount McKinley Bank is a large maker of mortgages in the Fairbanks market. Yukon Title, I'm just speaking for the entities that I know about. And things are slow with the banks insofar as construction for some of the reasons that you went through today. What catalysts do there need to be in this marketplace to see a pickup in residential construction? We went through and detailed the decline in units up for sale. We talked about the length of time that units are on the market. What do we, you know, when I asked my banker, thank you, when I asked my banker that question, his response was, well, when people want to start buying houses again, we will be ready to you know, to loan on them, and your response seems to be that they'll loan for construction, but not so much anymore on speculation. What is it going to take for there to be a catalyst in the Alaska marketplace to spark the construction side of the industry? Because we saw the permits for Anchorage have declined considerably. Can you just talk about that for a few minutes?
Well, certainly, Mr. Chair. I think, of course, the consumer confidence, and that also goes to the banks. As they take their lead on a federal level, their access to capital and the restrictions. I know some of the banks have had some questionable, they've just had some investments that have gone on the housing side, and we're talking to them about some of the properties that are out there that aren't performing adequately. We're looking at angles, for instance, on conversion of multifamily and accessing some of the various capital dollars that are out there to try and convert to offer some assistance, meaning to keep the market strong. We're also looking at properties that HFC owns, valuable pieces of property that need work, 35, 40-year-old structures that aren't worth putting the money into now. They're better off to doze them under. We don't want to see any net loss in affordable units. But a good one we're going to be coming at you with is LUSAC, which is valuable property right at the A and C Street corridors by Sullivan Arena. That whole portion of land in there is owned by this corporation, owned by the state. We've been throwing, our maintenance guys are wonderful, but that's stuff that needs to be redone. It's also a valuable location that could then involve private sector development rather than just have it as a public housing unit, expand it into an affordable unit to help develop housing for the workforce in downtown Anchorage. As it currently stands, if you work in downtown Anchorage, unless you're, many of the jobs there, you can't afford to live in downtown Anchorage. So we want to start making better use through partnering with valuable pieces of property. I think it's going to take some persuasion on the parts of the banks working with the legislature and the governor and HFC and others as to the validity of the market and to let's not overreact and let's make sure that the market is there. Because you speculate built 40 homes last year doesn't mean you're going to do that this year, but what's a reasonable number? And the market conditions we currently have in Paul Hill, what do we have, 900 homes in inventory? That was the last number we had. That, as experts will tell you, that's not a bad number. Optimum, I think, was, what, 1,100 at one point?
We hit 1,100.
Yeah. Meaning that's the inventory that's out there. So there are those that would say, well, wait a minute, we seem to be okay. Now, what I would like to encourage and remind people is we've got a lot of things pending. Pipeline work, whichever side that goes, renewed interest by the current president, the new president, in developing some of these. These are all things that are out there pending, and we need to encourage that continued development, because if that stuff starts going, which we all hope it does, well, we don't have then the housing capability. That's going to be a real boom to that housing market. I think reaching out to the commercial banks for some partnering opportunities. I kind of mentioned that earlier, but I think that's a good way for us to, in reasonable, well underwritten properties, to help sustain lending activity and give the banks a little bit of support. I don't mean a handle, but I mean just, there's money to be used out there and a benefit to be derived from it. And I want to continue negotiations like that with various lending firms. We're blessed in this state in that we've got strong, locally owned banks. We're not totally driven, and nothing against Wells, but it's a major
yes.
national firm that's decisions are driven maybe differently.
But Wells may very well end up in the Dow Jones 30 here in the next 180 days as some of the Bank of America and Citicorp go out. So what you may be anticipating then is that people are going to take their AHFC-originated loans, refinance them, through other more attractive programs that are out there, that leaves you with a surplus of capital, and then you may use that capital to go partner with in-state banks, whether they're small regional in-state banks or even with the larger commercial banks, to try and stimulate more activity on the new construction side. Is that what I heard you say?
Discussions in that regard would also require some staff. I mean, if it gets to that point, we'd certainly be down here talking to the governor's office and to the legislature about what role they see us playing in economic stability or, you know, the economy of the state and that housing side.
So that's one direction, and then some regentrification with affordable housing and 35 to 40-year-old structures is another avenue that you're exploring. And I would assume that Raven's Landing, Fairview Manor up in Fairbanks is a product that might potentially fit into that kind of a portfolio if it makes sense. And I'll put in a plug for Karen Parr up there, who continues to find a way to facilitate a need for seniors in the Fairbanks area where the math previously has been difficult to string together. But that's the kind of project that AHFC now has the ability to take a second look at.
Correct.
And some of the other markets, Ketchikan and Juneau and the Anchorage and the Kenai and the Mat-Su market, the same thing. You're taking an eye to all of those markets and trying to find a niche that AHFC fits into without chasing the market.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. There also is, unless something dramatic changes, I don't want to see us get caught up in the environment around us to the point that we forget that we're a vibrant state, we have a growing economy, we have a strong economy, or growing population, a strong economy, and we need to keep investing in ourselves in the way we normally would have prior to the financial collapse. Meaning, okay, that's occurred, it's a bad thing, you have to have faith in our system that we're going to work our way through it. But where was Alaska on the day before it happened versus the day after? And do those seniors still need affordable housing? Do we still need more affordable housing for the workforce in Juneau, Fairbanks, or pick a spot, Mat-Su, Kenai? The normal building that we were doing, what has changed that would tell us that we should back off and not be involved in it? And that's where we need to work on. And my attitude is, I haven't seen that significant a change that would have us fold up our tent and just sit around and, again, we're not going to chase the market, as you and I had talked about before, but there's an active market out there. You have inquiries every day from people wanting to do that, and we want to continue to pursue it.
Well, I find it an exceptional presentation. I thank you. There's an LBNA meeting that's hot and heated, so we lost some of our members to that. It's 6:30. It was a wonderful 90-minute presentation. We thank you. We encourage you to find a venue to provide that presentation to the other body. I think it would be valuable information to disseminate over there. We thank you for bringing down so many of the key figures that make Alaska Housing the most successful program in the arsenal of the state of Alaska, without question, the one that has put 3,000 families a year into new houses and returned $500 million to the general fund of the state treasury. So I continue to applaud your efforts and the fact that this is one of the niches in which the state of Alaska leads the nation by example with the weatherization program, with some of the housing features. And I just applaud your efforts and thank you for your quiet commitment to the infrastructure of the Alaskan economy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Thank you. And with that, at 6:30, we're adjourned.